Open your Bibles, if you will, to Mark chapter 6. Mark chapter 6. As you are turning there, I'm going to ask you a question. My question's a real simple one. I really think I know the answer because I know what most Christians feel, how they feel about it. But how many of you, you know, we always think in our Christian lives we want to help people. Is this not on? It's on, Tom. No, it's on off. That's why. You know, did I turn it off this morning?
Oh, is it on? I'm sorry. I thought that was. So that was on. It was on when you gave it to me. I turned it off, huh? Hire the handicaps. You want to watch them work. All right. Most Christians would like to be a blessing to people, right? Right? Let me ask you a question. How would you like to be? Now, don't worry, I am not starting my charismatic meeting or ministry tonight, but how many of you, imagine this, would like to be part of a blessing? I'm talking about a real blessing to somebody. Would you like that? Maybe? Good. Give the evangelist a large offering. No, I'm sorry. I'm sorry. How many of you, imagine this, how would you like to see a miracle? How would you like to take part in that miracle? Really. Imagine God working a miracle and using you in some part of that. Would that be exciting? Oh, well, like I said, I'm not going to, you know, speak in tongues or try to heal anybody or anything like that. But I've often thought, you know, that if you could be part of a miracle, I mean, see it right there and then be part of it, that'd really be something, wouldn't it? Let me ask you this. If you were to view a miracle and be there and be part of it, would that be exciting? Would that make you glad? Would it make you mad? Well, we'll see. I'm going to talk to you about what I call tonight the second blessing. Now, I believe in the second blessing. When I say the second blessing, I'm not talking about how some folks talk about it. They talk about a second blessing like it's a second work of grace, you know, and you're going to be sinlessly perfect or something like that. And that's not what I mean at all. I am one of those people. You know, they always say, you can't get the second blessing. I never got over the first. And I haven't. I really have never gotten over the first blessing. I got saved, got excited about it then. And I've just never gotten over it, man. It's just a great thing to be saved. But when I talk about the second blessing, I mean simply this. Here's what I believe. I believe the Lord wants to bless you. I believe God wants to use you as part of a blessing. And you may drop the ball. You say, oh, no, not me. Yeah, you may drop the ball. And what I'm telling you is that in case you do, the good news tonight is he'll come by and try to use you again. But there is a law to that second blessing, and that's what we're going to look at tonight. I want you to look at Mark, Mark chapter 6. Mark chapter 6, the Lord had sent the apostles out, and it says this in verse 30, and the apostles gathered themselves together unto Jesus and told him all things, both what they had done and what they had taught. So what they did is they went out, they did all these things for the Lord. They're coming back and they're kind of reporting to the Lord on their progress. And he said unto them, come ye yourselves apart into a desert place and rest a while. For there were many coming and going, and they had no leisure so much as to eat. And they departed into a desert place by ship privately. And the people saw them departing, and many knew him, and ran afoot thither out of all cities, and outwent them, and came together unto him. Let's bow our heads, let's talk to God. Father, it is Sunday night. These folks did come to church Sunday night. God, these folks came to get something from you. Now, Lord, I don't want to be the reason that they don't. I ask you, God, take Sam Gipp, get him out of your way, get him out of their way. Father, speak to the heart of each individual. God, I believe this is a message that you would have delivered. So, Father, I pray that I will not hinder it or be an obstacle in any way. I pray, God, that the church will be edified, that you might be glorified. In Jesus Christ's name we ask it. Amen. Now, I want you to notice something here about verse 31. Back in verse 30, they come to him. They're telling him what they did. And he says this. He said to them, come ye yourselves apart into a desert place and rest a while. Now, I'm going to tell you right up front, I believe in vacation. I believe. That's what he's telling them, right? He's telling them to get away for a while. These guys had been pushing it hard. They had been working. I'm serious. They've been working hard. You know, my dad worked for Republic Steel. At one time, it got to the point where they had 13 weeks paid vacation. That's one-fourth of the year. That is, that's 1/4 of the year. Now, I don't know that anybody works that hard. But I think you ought to have a couple weeks off. I think you ought to just get away. The way our schedule runs is most of my meetings are Sunday through Friday. So we'll start a meeting like this one, start on Sunday morning, go to Friday, drive Saturday, which is what we did last week, did the week before. But you drive Saturday, start Sunday morning, go till Friday, drive Saturday, start Sunday morning, go to Friday, drive Saturday. We have had as many as 31 weeks in a row without a week off. And I get this every now and then, and it's well-meaning, and it's friends. Friends say this, and they'll say this. They'll say, hey, when you get some time off, you know, when you get some vacation or something, come by and see us. And I say it this way. I say, when I get some time off, I don't want to see you. All right? You say, that sounds very cold. Yeah, but that's the truth. You say, why? Because I want to go someplace and watch grass grow. I want to go someplace where there are no humans, all right? You just have, when you're with people all the time, you know what you want? You want a desert place. That's what you want. And I'm going to tell you something. On behalf of your preacher, and he hadn't said anything because I don't know what he does about his vacation or anything, but if your pastor ever goes to a conference, I don't even mean if he's not preaching. I mean if he just goes to a conference, when he gets back, don't say, how was your vacation? Because that's not a vacation, all right? If you work for the phone company, I'm sure you don't go watch them put phones in for a week and call it a vacation, right? But what you need to do is you need to get away. And so here's what the Lord says. Look, the Lord believes in vacation. Because he told these guys, come into a desert place and rest a while. But it gets better, watch. And they departed, verse 32. And they departed into a desert place by ship privately. Christian cruises. Right? You can imagine what was going through these guys' minds. And I don't know, if you ever get desperate for time off, you just imagine what it's going to be like, and you start to anticipate what it's going to be. And that's what, you know, for us, again, you know, sometimes I have people say this. They'll say, here's what you need to do when you have time off. And I said, look, when we have time off, to do is not enough vocabulary. I mean, to not do, or not to do. That's what we think about, you know. And so you can imagine, here they are, they're on this boat. They have been seeing, I mean, literally hordes of people coming in. And they've been healing people and casting out demons and all this stuff. And now they're on this little boat, and it's a private cruise. And you know what they're talking about? They're talking, oh, man, it's going to be nice. We're just going to go, we'll sleep on the beach at night, be around a campfire, maybe sing some songs. You know, we'll catch our fish and cook it right there on the campfire there in the morning. Man, what a great time. I mean, probably John had his jet ski, Peter had his ducky, and it all looks good until, verse 33, and the people saw them departing, and many knew him and ran afoot thither out of all cities. Now it went them and came together unto him. Now you know what will ruin a vacation? 5,000 people. I mean, that will ruin a vacation. You go away where you just want to be by yourself, and you see 5,000 people show up, and they want you to do something for them? I mean, it's just not exciting. You say, well, you've got to be backslidden. No, no, no. But here they are. So these folks show up. Verse 34. And Jesus, when he came out, saw much people and was moved with compassion toward them because they were his sheep not having a shepherd. And he began to teach them many things. And when the day was now far spent, his disciples came unto him and said, this is a desert place. And now the time is far past. You might want to send them away, that they may go into the country round about and into the villages and buy themselves bread, for they have nothing to eat. Have you ever noticed how whenever somebody wants something, they always blame God? See, these guys, now here's what's going through their mind. You know exactly what's going through their mind. We're going to have this little time. It's going to be us and Jesus. We're going to sleep out there, you know, by the surf. We're going to catch our breakfast and cook it on the campfire. And 5,000 people show up. And they know they can't walk up to the Lord and say, hey, Lord, these guys are really messing up our time off. Why don't you get rid of them? Because, you know, they're going to get a sermon. Oh, boy, you guys, you got no compassion. What's the matter with you? So, you know what? You ever notice those people that always just know how to make it? You know, we're here to help you. Lord, it's not us we're concerned about, but, you know, them. And they're probably hungry. And Tommy's is offering 10% off. Lord, maybe you should send them there because they have nothing to eat. I had a guy in my church when I first took it. He was a deacon, temporarily. And I remember one time, early in my pastor, I made some serious errors. One of them was I went past 8:30 on a Wednesday night. So how did I know? Because he was there to tell me. But oh, no. He had no complaint. No. He came in to help me. And he said, "Now, Pastor, you know, I'm a deacon, and I'm here to help you." That's what he said. And he said, "I'm here to kind of protect you." And he said, "I'm just afraid that, you know, when you go past 8:30 and don't ask the deacons about it or anything like that, someone may be upset, and so I need to know what to tell them." Now, ain't that a lie? You know exactly what the guy's problem was, man. There wasn't no rope from my mouth to his hand. There was no reins, and he didn't have his hand on him. That's what upset him. And that's what these guys' problem was. Their problem was they wanted to get rid of these people, but they couldn't say it. So they kind of, "Well, you know, they haven't eaten, and you're concerned about them, right, Lord?" "Well, yeah, I'm concerned." "Well, you know, you better send them away." What they don't know is that God, the Lord Jesus Christ, is about to let them be part of a blessing, part of a miraculous blessing. And he answered and said unto them, "Give ye them to eat." Now look at their reaction. Their reaction is not the nicest. And they say to him, "Should we go and buy 200 penny worth of bread and give them to eat?" I mean, somebody's just a little sharp. You say, "Oh, who would ever get mad at God? Go look in a mirror." You want to see somebody get mad at God? Forget about the apostles. Just go look in a mirror. How many times you ever messed up your plans? Right? I tell people, "You know, I've been saved 27 years. You know what I've done for 27 years? For 27 years, in every one of life's situations, I've written out the script of exactly what God ought to do. I send it on to heaven. He looks at it. Then he pitches over his shoulder and goes about doing what he wanted to as though he were God." He says unto them, "How many loaves have ye? Go and see." And when they knew, they say, 5 and 2 fishes. See, they didn't even have enough. They didn't have enough food for themselves. I mean, they were going to catch it. They were going to have a nice time. And this is not the little boy that shared his lunch. What mother in her right mind would give a kid 5 loaves of bread for lunch? I'd make one of the meanest fish sandwiches you've ever seen. Wouldn't that be more bread than McDonald's puts in them? Now look at verse 39. "He commanded them to make all sit down by companies upon the green grass." Now I'm sorry, I do read between the lines. But you've got to understand what's going through these guys' minds. They're on their way there. Their anticipation is up. Their expectations are up. We're going to go and have... And look, I mean, we're not talking about party animals. We're not talking about sin. They needed some time off. They wanted some time off. Best of all, they're going to get some time off. Then 5,000 guys bring their wives and their children. They get some kind of Promise Keepers meeting or something. And so they show up. And these guys figure, okay, we'll just tell the Lord it's time for them to go eat, you know, why don't you send them away? And then we'll get back to where we were. And what does the Lord do instead? He says, no, I think we can feed them with 5 loaves and 2 fish, no problem. Go have them sit down. I don't think this was the crowd, these 12 guys, I don't think these were the guys to ask anybody to sit down. And so you can just imagine Peter, you know, I can just say, "Yeah, sit down. Yeah, you want to sit? Yeah, well, I'm hungry too, pal. Now just sit down and shut up. Yeah, sit. I don't. Well, he should have gone before we started eating. Will you sit down? Will you shut up? Yeah, okay. Go. Yeah, John, will you tell that kid to sit down over there?" I mean, I'm not sure these guys were real civil with these people. And they sat down in ranks by hundreds and by fifties. And when he had taken the 5 loaves and the 2 fishes, he looked up to heaven and blessed and brake the loaves and gave them to his disciples to set before them, and the 2 fishes divided he among them all. So here they come. He breaks up these fish, puts them in baskets. These guys start out. Now you know what's going through their mind. Imagine if I had, let's say about 4 hamburger buns. And I've got to feed this whole crowd. And I'm starting at the front pews. I mean, even 4 pews back, you guys are in trouble, aren't you? Especially if I blessed it. And so you can imagine Peter's going down here saying, pal, here, have some bread and some fish. Here, okay, just shut up. Here's some bread. Just be glad you're in the front row. Don't talk about how much you got. Those people back, they're going to be real hot. Yeah, take some bread, some fish. Take some more bread and fish. Here. Hey, John, you running out of bread and fish yet?
Oh, no, Pete, man, it's almost like this thing gives you up.
Yeah, that's right. Here, take some bread and fish. Here's some bread, some fish. Here, you take this to your mother. Some bread, some fish. Take some... I can't believe this. And they went down through there. And they did all eat, verse 42, and were filled. And they took up 12 baskets full of fragments and of the fishes. Stop and think about this. They took up more leftovers than they started with. That'd be pretty small baskets that you'd fill up with 5 loaves and 2 fish. That means they had 12 baskets left over. How would you like every one of those disciples, when this whole thing was over, was carrying more in their hands than they had started with? You think it was evident that a miracle had taken place? Wouldn't they be excited? Wouldn't they be thrilled, just like you? You know, to take part of a miracle, take part in a miracle, take part in a blessing? Not these guys. What's the law of the first blessing, or what did it take for the first blessing? It took 5 loaves, 2 fish. I don't have 12 fingers, all right? 12 backsliders. 5,000 people are fed, and what's left over? 12 basketfuls are left over. That's what's left. But you know something? These guys never paid any attention to it. You know why? Because they're mad at God. You know why? Because he had messed up their plans. See, you say, I want to be part of a miracle. I'd like to be part of a blessing. Yeah, if you can schedule it. If you could tell God exactly what it would be and when it would happen, and so it wouldn't be inconvenient to you. But if it's going to happen right up, it's like this. You know, the preacher says revival. What if I told you God was going to send literally a moving of the Holy Spirit, and there's going to be a great move of the Holy Spirit in this building, and there's going to be a great revival? You say, oh man, good. I want to be part of it. And I said, but it's coming about 2:30 in the morning. We've all got to stay here till it happens. If I told you that and I knew it, you know what some of you would be saying? Well, God can get here at 8:30 just as he can get here at 2:30. I don't know why we got to wait around. We're going to wait around. Nothing will happen anyway. You see what I'm saying? We sit there and say we want to be part of something. We want to see God move. And as soon as God goes contrary to any kind of plans that we have in our mind, anything that we have laid out, we get mad. You say, oh, you think they were mad? I don't think they were mad. No, that would be my opinion. I have proof. The Lord didn't even want to mess with them. They that did eat were of the loaves were about 5,000 men. Watch. And straightway constrained his disciples to get into the ship and to go to the other side before unto Bethsaida, while he sent the people away. Sent away the people. He didn't even want to ride home with them. Vacation is gone. No vacation. He said, look, guys, thank you. Why don't you just get on, take your, you know, just get on the boat and go back to Bethsaida. Well, Lord, how are you going to get back? I'll walk. And he did. I mean, can you imagine standing with the Sea of Galilee behind you saying, how are you going to get home, Lord? So, I'll walk. There's no bridge. You think, I don't know that. I made that sea. And so he is going to walk home. And he is walking across the Sea of Galilee. And they see him. They've got a storm going on. They call him. He gets in the ship. And all of a sudden, everything's fine. And they're amazed at that because look what happens. Verse 49. When they saw him walking upon the sea, they supposed it had been a spirit and cried out. And they all saw him and were troubled. And immediately talked with them and said unto them, be of good cheer. It is I. Be not afraid. And he went up unto them into the ship. And the wind ceased. And they were sore amazed themselves beyond measure and wondered. Watch. Verse 52. For they considered not the miracle of the loaves, for their heart was hardened. They had not witnessed a miracle. They hadn't heard about a miracle. They had it in their hands, had they not? They had touched that bread and that fish and had literally been part of that miracle, and they didn't even consider it because it messed up their plans and they was mad at him. You know what God's going to do? God's going to try to use you. You know what our whole problem is? Listen, you know what you think? I'll tell you exactly what you think. You think God ought to work a miracle for you. Yeah. Hey, okay, God, I know it's going to be tough, but go ahead, you make me a millionaire. I'll tithe it. And I think you might. You say, well, man, $100,000, I'd be tithing it. Yeah, I think God believes you'd give that $100,000. Then why won't he give me the $1,000,000? Because he knows the $900,000 will probably get you out of church. That's why. And so whenever we think there ought to be some kind of a miracle, we always think that we ought to be the focal point of that miracle. Whenever there's going to be a blessing, I mean, who really ought to have a blessing more than? Isn't that right? I tell you what happened one time. There's several more years ago than I can remember right now, but at the time I was youth director down at Massey, and I was teaching a couple of college courses, and I was busy. I was teaching my department Sunday morning and Sunday evening, take care of our visitation. I was the superintendent for all of the evening Sunday school classes. I was teaching in the college. I was working on my degree. I was taking care of our summer camps. And I was writing a Christmas play for our Christmas thing. And I was also the president of Northeast Ohio Youth Fellowship. And so I had plenty to do. And then on top of that, I was a typical Baptist preacher, which meant broke. And my wife and I really needed some time off. We just needed some time off. And there's no way we could ever get any time off. And I'll tell you what happened. One of the students in one of the college classes that I taught was from Michigan. Now we're from Ohio, correct? Ohio, you know how Michigan is. When I found out the guy was from Michigan, that should have sent warning signs. But no, I was desperate. And here's what he did. He came to me one time, and he said, "My parents have a cottage on a lake in Michigan." Has the picture developed? I mean, do you see it? I mean, I can just see a cottage on a lake. I said, "What lake?" He said, "Grass Lake." Now, you see, I should have thought when I heard that name, Grass Lake. I mean, a grass lake is a swamp, right? I mean, why would anybody look at any lake and want to name it Grass? But no, desperate that I was, he said, "My parents have this cottage on Grass Lake in Michigan, in Napoleon, Michigan." And he said, "They will give you the week there free." Well, there was the stipulation we needed. So I talked to my secretary and I arranged to go up there. And so we got everything all planned. At that time, we had just John. Nathan was just a little baby. They just had the two boys. And so the day came. We packed up. We had this little Chevette. Now, if you ever owned a Chevette, here's where you got to give General Motors credit. General Motors scientifically designed the Chevette so that you could roll down both windows and be in a crosswind and no air would get inside that car. You could not get air in a Chevette if you put fans in the windows. You could always tell people that own Chevettes because what you do is you drive down the road with your hand on the mirror like this, trying to direct. You want to get some air. In fact, after a while, you'd walk around. You always tell Chevette owners they'd walk around like this. And we would meet. You know how Chevette clubs got started? We would hook in malls. You'd be walking down, some other guy would be coming down, you'd go, "Whoa, whoa." And I'd go, "I'll bet you own a Chevette." And he'd go, "Well, how do you know?" It's all a wild guess. So we pack up our little Chevette. We start down the road, and we got 125 miles out of Massillon. We left on a Saturday afternoon. We're going to go to a church up in Michigan and spend the night, Saturday night there, be in church Sunday morning, and then go into Napoleon Sunday night. And have our cottage week in the cottage on the lake. We got 125 miles out of town when my wife said something that alerted me. Now, this is the first time any warning signs went off. My wife said, "I forgot our suit bag with the clothes in, the hanging clothes." Now, the reason that alerted me, it wasn't the case. Listen, man, go to Kmart, buy more clothes. That's no problem. I'll tell you why that alerted me. My wife doesn't forget anything. I forget everything. I carry my card with me. You say, "So you can give it to preachers for meetings." No, so I don't have to call information when I call home. I've done it 3 times. You know how embarrassing it is to call information? They say, "What's it?" I'm always afraid they're going to recognize my voice. And I say, "Maslin, go on, Sam Gipp. Isn't this you?" No, this is my brother. Honest people, one time this happened. This happened. I just refused to believe what I just told you. I just refused to believe. You can't remember your own phone number. I had 5,000 sheets of stationery printed with the wrong phone number on. And the card was right here. It's right in my pocket. I said, "What's the phone number?" "Look, I can handle this. It's only off by one digit." I was all, but the guy wouldn't transfer any of my calls. I'd get people, they'd say, "Hey, I called your office and I got your answer machine." I said, there's no answering machine at that number. He said, well, there is now. I said, no, there's really not. One guy said, I called your office. They never heard of you. I guarantee it wasn't long before they had, all right? And then I finally looked, and it was just, I looked at the stationery. I said, man, something's going on here. I looked at the stationery. The phone number was off by one digit. I called the number. I was going to tell these people I'm sorry for having put your number in there. It was disconnected. I think the guy's in evangelism. When I pastored, I'd forget my kids at the church. To this day, they think it was an accident. But anyway, so it's not a big thing for me to forget. But my wife, if somebody tells me something, and they say, I just say, whoa, come here. And we walk over to Kathy, and I said, tell her. And they tell her, I said, now it's in the computer. All right? I mean, look, this week all this this radio stuff and bookstore stuff, if he does not lead me by the hand, it ain't happening. You say, well, look, you can give it to me with the time and the place and the directions, and I will be sitting in my car listening on radio to see if I'm there. And so we start down there. And my wife said, I forgot the hanging clothes. Here's what happened. You ever hear that, and this is really what happened. You ever hear that old joke? This guy buys a jackass and he wants it to be trained. And so he takes it to this guy who's famous for training jackasses. And he says, now, I need you to train my jackass. Can you do it? Oh, man, train him all the time. No problem, I can train. He said, oh, wait a second. He said, I don't want you to be mean or cruel to my jackass. Oh, no, I'm never cruel to animals. No, it's no problem at all. You won't be mean to? No, I won't. You just go on, come back about a week. I'll have him train. Okay, so the guy gets in his truck and he starts down the lane. He sees this guy leading his jackass around behind the barn. As he does, he leans over to a wood pile and picks up a 2x4 about that long. That guy thinks, what does he need a 2x4 to train my jackass? So he parks his truck, comes across the the pasture, comes around the corner of the barn, just in time to see this guy. He's got this 2x4 back, just like, I mean, he is ready to let go. Here's the jackass standing there like any Democrat. And, man, he lets fly with this 2x4 right between the eyes. I mean, he sets this jackass right down on his haunches. And this guy runs up and he said, hey, man, you don't you be mean to my jackass? You said you were going to be mean to my jackass. He said, I'm not. He said, well, what did you just do? He said, I'm on a train. He said, what did you just do? He said, well, you got to get their attention first. You know, when my wife said, I forgot her hanging clothes, here's what I really thought. Here's what I saw in my mind's eye. I thought I saw God reach over to a woodpile, pick up a 2x4. And I thought, well, no, wait. Look, have you ever been hit? Have you ever had God hit you with a 2x4 to get your attention? If you have, when you see his hand go for the 2x4s, he has your attention. That's the truth. And so when his hand went to that pile of wood, I went, oh. Well, I didn't know what was happening. Well, we're driving down the road, and all of a sudden my wife's window went down. Now, we didn't have power windows in that Chevette. Except on her side. And it was gravity power. And it went down, but it didn't go, it was about that far from going all the way down in, so I pushed it back up, and I took a bunch of my business cards, and I jammed them in the window to keep it up. Well, on our way to this place we're going to stay, we went through Dearborn, Michigan, and I'm a car nut, you know. And so we're going to the Henry Ford Museum. Let me tell you something. I don't know if you've ever been to the Henry Ford Museum, but now maybe they've changed this, but when at that time, when you're on the interstate, whichever, I think it's 95 or so, not 95, 75, thank you, 75, there's a sign right there. I mean, you can see it, the Henry Ford Museum. There's only one problem. There's no way to get from where you are to there. There was no off-ramp. There was no exit. There was nothing. So we finally exited, and here's what happens. They want you to ask for directions, because everybody that works in gas stations in Detroit has been imported from Alabama, and they've never heard of the Henry Ford Museum. I'll tell you the truth. We got off. I pulled into a gas station. I said, how do I go to get to the Henry Ford Museum? This guy says, well, Chuck, well, I never heard of no Henry Ford Museum. I'll tell you what y'all do. Now, y'all go down here about 3 blocks, and then you turn right. Go down about 2 blocks, and turn left, and go by another block. I said, is that the museum? No, it's not a gas station. My cousin, he works right there. Maybe he knows where it's at. I'm serious. And so this guy sends us to another, and that guy sends us to another gas station. And on the way to a gas station, we stumbled upon the Henry Ford Museum. Well, this happened. We get out, boom, down goes the window. Oh, turn the window. More cars. Well, I don't know if it's because I'm a Chevy man or what, but as we stepped through the door of the Ford Museum, I got sick. I mean, just like a wave of nausea. We went through the whole thing in about an hour and a half, and all I know that is there is a bunch of cars with ashtrays full of puke. That was after I left. I'm not sure that's where they were when I went, but I mean, I was sick. So I came out, and we got in our car, and all this is registering. Believe me, I mean, I can just see God. You know, and I said, now look, Lord, listen, if you're trying to get my attention, you don't have to hit me. I'm listening. So I told Kath, I said, look, we'll get a motel for the night. I'll call one of my students, lived there, and he went to that church where I was going to be. We're going to be visiting the next morning. And I said, I'll borrow a pair of shoes from him, borrow a suit coat from him, you know, I'll buy a white shirt and tie, and we'll go to church. And so I called him up, and sure enough, he brought a pair of shoes and a sport coat over. And we dressed up. We went Sunday morning. Oh, wait, I didn't tell you. I got to give you the better part. This still happened Saturday. It's happened Saturday. We're on our way up there. And the window goes down again. But this time, it goes all the way into the door. I mean, you can't even see it. You can't grab it. You say, what could be worse? You know exactly what was worse. The sky turned gray and began to rumble. Now, General Motors, I don't know if they still do, but at that time, General Motors held their window cranks and door handles on with what is known as a horseshoe clip. Rather than a screw, this horseshoe clip was there. You say, why? So that once they were put on, under no circumstances on earth could they ever be removed again. Now, they make a special tool. Does it work? No, but they sell a lot of them. But it's okay. I had one. But it was back in Ohio. And all I had two things with me. A flat screwdriver and my temper. And honest, I pulled this flat screwdriver out. I mean, it's getting ready to rain. I opened up the door, and I looked at my wife, and here's exactly what I said. Through clenched teeth, I said, pray. I said, it's coming off. I got the window cracked. I said, it's coming off in 30 seconds. I said, tell her. I want you to know I would have opened up the outside of that door like a can opener to get to that window. I mean, it was coming off. I grabbed this door handle. I shoved the screwdriver. It came off. I mean, it just like that, it came off. I said, man, how'd that do that? Oh, no. Anyway, so I got inside. I want you to know I jammed that window there. That car has probably been through a car crusher, and the window is still up. I mean, it stayed up. So we get in Saturday night, call this guy. Sunday morning, we go to the church. And it's a rather large church, and my wife and I are sitting out there, and the preacher comes down, he says, Brother Gipp, he says, I understand you and your wife sing. And I said, yes, sir. He said, would you mind singing for us? No problem. So Kathy and I went to the pulpit, he called us, and we came up to the pulpit and sang. And we get done, and I'm walking off here, and there's the pulpit. I'm about right here when the pastor sitting up there says, I like that, Brother Gipp. How about coming preaching to us right now? And I had from here to there to get a sermon. You know, in season, out of season. I came to the pulpit. He said, were you ready? Of course I was ready. I mean, I wasn't planning. I wasn't planning. I had no idea that this guy was going to ask me to preach. But in that time to hear, I came to the pulpit and preached for an hour and a half to make them pay for asking me. But anyway, and the invitation was given, you know, and people hit the altar and all. Well, then we were there for Sunday night service. Now, by Sunday night, now here's how you get to Napoleon. You go to Jackson, Michigan, and turn left. That's all I know. And by that time, it is raining so hard, literally, cats, dogs, and buckets are bouncing off our car. I mean, it is coming down. It's a deluge. So we come off the interstate, and we pull onto this, a two-lane road like what you have here. And we turned off of that onto one of those little country roads. And we turned off of that onto a little kind of a dingy, almost a one-lane road. And then we pulled into Napoleon. Now, I know you think I am making this up. Or that I am adding something to it. So feel free to ask my wife, and she'll agree. But did you ever see one of those horror films? And it starts, you know, a dark and stormy night, and you see a boarded up building, and the car headlights, the headlights of a car scan this building, stop, and it's a young couple, and they're going, "Oh, we can stay here, dear," and they're never heard or seen again. Heard from. We pulled into Portland, Michigan at 12 o'clock midnight. It was a dark and stormy night, and the road we were on teed into Main Street, Napoleon, and dead ahead of us is a boarded up old building. And as our headlights are shining on this, I'm sitting at the stoplight, and I looked over at Kath and I said, "Did we just drive into the Twilight Zone?" I said, "Did we just begin a horror flick?" I really did. I said, "Man, this is how horror movies start. I've seen them, man." I said, "We may die tonight." And I'm thinking about the student. And words like grade average are going through my mind. So we come off these little roads. We finally turn onto this little, like a one-lane dirt road, which is now mud. And about 1:30 in the morning, we turned off that onto two ruts with grass growing up in the center. And I'm not thinking about grade averages now. I'm thinking about shallow graves. One, just one in particular. We pull up to this cottage on the lake. Now, he said it was on the lake. It may be. I stand here to testify, I've never seen Grass Lake. Say, "Were you there?" "Yes, I was there. But I've never seen it. It must have been the grass." I mean, this place was surrounded by grass about this high. And it was that, they must have lived in Kentucky at one time, or West Virginia. It was that decor where as many car parts as you can lean against the outside of the house. You know, a stack of old tires and rims, and a hood over here, and a you know, 53 Chrysler fender leaning here. I get out, and this is the outside, and I want you to know the outside was the good part. We stepped into this place, and the first thing you notice is there's more, it's raining cats and dogs outside, and there's more humidity in this building than out. I mean, the green carpet went halfway up the walls. Oh, that's not carpet. I mean, listen, man, my nostrils started to mildew. It was so wet in there, you'd sit down and you could feel it begin to creep into your clothes. Yeah? I mean, you would sit down dry and get up. You say, "Where would you sit?" All right, listen, I found some place you're wondering about. We discovered the famous couch graveyard. If you wonder where your uncle's couch is, it is in a cottage on Grass Lake in Napoleon, Michigan. So is your grandmother's couch. So is my grandmother's couch. All couches end up here. They must have had, it's a little living room, they must have had five couches in this living room. You could not fall down and hit the floor, you'd fall on a couch. There are couches everywhere. I'm looking at this, and it's, you can't sit on anything because it's wet. And all that is, the only door, there's not even a solid door, there's nothing but an old wooden screen door. And there's not even a hook and an eye so you can pretend that you're going to lock somebody out. I mean, it's, and I'm honest, people, I don't get afraid or anything like this. But I looked at this place and I said, "Kathy," I said, "this just looks like the creature from the Black Lagoon should come in here and rip that door off at any moment and kill us. That's just what it looked like." Well, we began to bring our stuff in. And my wife, of course, our children are asleep. She takes them into our room. And the bed was a padded bathtub. You know, the kind of go, "Whoa." You didn't need a ladder to get in. You needed a ladder to get out. I mean, I heard her yell. She had made the mistake of sitting on the edge. You went, "Whoa," you know. And so she rolled our boys down into this bed. And I'm bringing stuff in. And all of a sudden, from that bedroom, I hear my wife scream. Now, I have been married to this lady for quite a while, and I know all of the "it's a mouse, it's a spider" scream. And it was not either one of those. This was a terrified mother. All right? I went into that bedroom, not knowing what on earth I'm going to see. And when I walked into that bedroom, from the ceiling to about right here, it's filled with smoke. And it's that acrid burnt wiring smell. And I thought, this place is going to burn down tonight. And so I said, it's a short someplace. I put my hand on the switch, on the light switch, and it burnt me. So I figured there's a short in the light switch. I turned it off. I said, Kathy, if it's just a short in the switch, this should clear out, and we'll keep an eye. If it doesn't, all right. And I looked there, and I said this, and it's my exact words. I said, if we are alive in the morning, we're leaving here. Is that what I told you? That's what I told you. I was not sure about the first part, but I guarantee you, if the first part, if God came through and kept us alive, we were out of Grass Lake. Morning came. It was still raining. And I am loading up that Chevette to head back for Massillon. These people show up and they go, oh, you're leaving. You better believe we're leaving. Saying, yeah, yeah. You just write your son book. You're never going to see that boy again. Tuesday morning, I walked into my office. My secretary said, I thought you were on vacation this week. I said, so did I. So what happens? That's what I'd like to know. Now, honest, none of that was the 2x4. I don't think God ever hit me that 2x4 on that. But he sure got, I knew if I'd have stayed there, no telling what would have happened. But we got out of there. Didn't you ever have God mess up your plans? Didn't you? Haven't you ever planned something? You needed something desperately, and God messed it up. You know what? Maybe he was trying to make you a blessing. But you see, if he won't make you a blessing the way you want to be a blessing, you just might not consider the miracle of the loaves, for your heart is hardened. Chapter 8, we'll look at the second blessing. And as we look at chapter 8, we're going to come in contact with something that is at once one of the funniest and stupidest statements in the Bible. Here you go, chapter 8, Mark chapter 8, says this, verse 1, in those days the multitude, being very great, and having nothing to eat, Jesus called his disciples unto him, and saith unto them, I have compassion on the multitude, because they have now been with me 3 days, and have nothing to eat. And if I send them away fasting to their own houses, they will faint by the way, for diverse of them came from far. And his disciples answered him, from whence can a man satisfy these men with bread here in the wilderness? I'm going to ask you something. How can anybody who lived through Mark chapter 6 make that statement in Mark chapter 8? I could understand if they said that in Mark chapter 6 because the miracle had not happened, right? You say, how could, that is a stupid question. But you know why, don't you? Remember what it said in verse 52 of chapter 6? They considered not the miracle of the loaves. The fact, you know what they should have said there? When he said, we're going to feed him. He should have, and they said, what do you have to eat? You know what they could have said? They said, oh, no problem, man. You just bless some bread and some fish and you'll feed these guys like you did that 5,000. Looks like it's only about 4,000, man. You can take care of this. But instead, they had completely missed a miracle, not that they had seen, they had taken part in. Right? Does the hardness of the human heart ever astound you? It astounds me. And I'll be honest with you guys, I'll be very gracious to you. It is not the hardness of your heart that astounds me. It's the hardness of mine. Because I'm the guy that messes up more things for God than that I have to take care of, all right? You may mess up some things that you've got to take care of, but I am astounded sometimes at the hardness of the human heart. Verse 4, and his disciples answered him, from whence can a man satisfy these men with bread here in the wilderness? And he asked him, how many loaves have ye? That's exactly what he said in chapter 6. Now, really, I don't know if it happened or not, but somewhere about that time, John would have went, should you know John or James? Or went, whoa, deja vu. Pete, how many loaves have you? I've heard that. It's like I've been here before. Five comes to mind. And somebody said, seven. And John went, oh, okay. And he commanded the people to sit down on the ground. And he took the seven loaves and gave thanks and break. Notice, he commanded the people to sit down. He didn't even let these guys sit them down. And he break and gave thanks. Gave thanks and break and gave to his disciples to set before them. And they did set them before the people. And they had a few small fishes. Now, a few small fishes. How many fish did they have? Well, a few. They had more than two. They might have had a half a dozen. Small fishes. They might have had five. I'll tell you what, just so I don't preach too much. Three. Because a few is more than two, right? Now, simple math. I mean, if you went to public school, you'd still be able to get this. Five loaves
feed 5,000 people. Right? Right? So 7 loaves should feed what? Sure. I mean, I can figure that out. You got 5 loaves, feeds 5,000 people. You got 7 loaves, you're going to feed 7,000 people. Yeah, 2 more thousand people show up. Get 2 more loaves of bread. That's... Verse 7, met a few small fishes, and he blessed and commanded to set them also before them. So they did eat and were filled, and they took up of the broken meat that was left 7 baskets. Well, it must have been a Baptist crowd this time. Less leftovers. Right? Probably had their pockets full, knowing Baptists. Verse 9. And they that had eaten were about 4,000. And he sent them away. Something's wrong. No, nothing's wrong. All that's happened is we have run into the law of the second blessing. Now, here's what God is going to do. God is going to try to use you to be a part of a blessing. And you drop the ball for whatever reason, basically be the hardness of your heart. He will come by and try to make you part of another blessing. That's how gracious he is. But I'll tell you, don't hold out for the first contract. You know what it took? It'll take the second time. It took more, 7 loaves and at least 3 fish, to feed fewer, 4,000 people, with 7 less baskets left over, right? The second blessing, it takes more to bless fewer with less left over. People, that's the law. That's how it goes. You know what God will do for you? God will try to use you. God will try to use you as part of a blessing for somebody else. That itself will upset you because you're not the focal point. You're not the recipient. But God will try to use you to be a blessing for someone else. And for whatever reason, you will say no. And when you say no and you drop the ball, you know what God will do in His grace and His kindness? He'll come by again. Now, here's the problem. When He comes by, He's going to offer you less. And you're going to say, what about the first contract? And you say, so what? You know, I was reading something here in Apple Computer, about Apple Computer. I guess they've been on hard times, but about 2 years ago, this company offered to buy Apple Computer. And Apple said, no, we won't sell. We want more money. 1 year later, Apple's in such bad financial shape. That company said, we'd like to buy you. And they said, but here's how much. It was less than the first offer. And Apple said, we want the first offer. And this guy said, you're not worth the first offer anymore. You know what you're going to do? Listen, God's going to come by and try to bless you. And when you drop the ball, when He comes by the second time, you know what you're going to start doing? You're going to start saying, well, can't we have chapter 6? He said, we could, but we're writing chapter 8 now, pal. And right now, you're not getting what you asked for. You're not getting the offer that you had before. I'll tell you how it happens. I was 1973. I just graduated from Bible college. I went into evangelism. That was my call. At that time, right after I came up to the Camp Baptist Temple. Now, Camp Baptist Temple, you know, it's a large church. They had 5,000 people at that time. They had I try to remember how this was. They had a 14s class, just all 14-year-olds. Then they had a senior high class. And the senior high class was so big that they're going to split it and make just a 15s and 16s. So they had 14s, 15s, and 16s. And Mel, the youth director, and another man in the church, they came to me one morning, and they said this. Mel says, We're going to split these classes, make a 15s and 16s. And he said, Brother Gene here is going to be the superintendent for the 15s class, and we need somebody to teach it. Will you be the teacher? Well, man, that's really quite an honor. Had 170 kids. Can you imagine 170 15-year-olds? And I said this. Now, I was flattered. It was a very nice thing, but I said this. I said, guys, I appreciate that. I said, but I'm in evangelism. Now, I'm the guy in 73 that went out into evangelism. I was going to set the world on fire. And at that time, I'm the guy that didn't know that they had fireproofed it. So why did you go back in 86? Because I heard they're taking out the asbestos, so I thought I'd give it a shot. But I said, guys, I'm going to be in evangelism, and I said, I'll be gone so many Sundays that I will be unfaithful. You know, I can't be sure that I'll be there. It wouldn't be fair to Gene. It wouldn't be fair to the kids. And so I said, really, I have to decline. Now, you know what was going on? God was trying to make me a blessing.
but it didn't jive with my plans. Then I even said this, why don't you go get brother so-and-so? And they said, yeah, we thought about him. We thought about him. If you said no, we thought about him, so we'll go get him. And they said this. They said, but look, if you won't preach, if you won't teach, would you and your wife be a pair of workers in the class? There's going to be about five couples. There's going to be workers, and you could be workers, and if you're gone, it won't be such a problem. I said, sure, no problem. So we became workers in the 15s department. Now, make a long story short, that class launched out with 170 kids. And in a short time, it had been built down to 150. And then to 140. And then to 130. And then to 120. And 110. And I went to God. Now listen, I want you to know I never talk. I don't try to cut people off or anything like that. But this thing started going down and down and down and down and down and down below 100 and 90. And I remember one day I was praying and I said this to God. I said, God, I said, this class is dying. You know what God said? He said, you're right, it is. And he said, every kid that walks out of that class and never comes back is credited to your account. Because I gave you the offer the first time. Man, that devastated me. And here's what I said. I told this to God. I said, God, under any circumstances, if you ever ask me again, I'll just say yes. Because the problem was, I wasn't gone every week like I thought I'd be. 1 month later, Gene came up to me and he said, the fellow that's been teaching is leaving. We need a new teacher. But you're in evangelism. So I'll tell you what we'll do, Sam. How about I teach for a month and you teach for a month and I teach for a month and you teach for a month? I said, you're on. You know what I got? I got 70 kids, 26 weeks out of the year. You know what the original offer was? 170 kids, 52 weeks a year. So did you jump at it? I jumped at it because it was the second blessing. I had messed up the first one. God was trying to use me, but all I was thinking about was myself. And I never saw the blessing, people. And so I passed. And the next time that blessing came around, brother, I grabbed onto it with all I could. Instead of getting 52 weeks, I got exactly half. I got 26 weeks. Instead of 170 kids, it was 100 kids short. It was 70 kids. And that class never did get back up to 170 again. But people, that's the law of the second blessing. You know what you need to realize? You need to realize that God wants to make you a blessing. Now, he's already done that with Bill. But he wants to make you a blessing. Yeah, I've just been thinking about that all night, that's all. But anyway, he wants to make you a blessing, but he may not do it on your terms. He may not do it on your schedule. He probably guaranteed will not do it at your convenience. But you know what they do? You know when you find a diamond? I don't know if you've ever seen a diamond in the rough, but a diamond in the rough looks like a rock. You would pass a diamond. It's not glowing. It's not glistening. It's not pretty. It's brown and dirty. Imagine if you had this big old diamond and they said, man, we'll cut this thing. It'd be the largest, most valuable diamond in the world. And so you give it. Now, here's what happens. They don't cut that diamond. They take it when it's rough and they rough cut it, which is basically they get it into a general shape. And that guy can look down into it and see how it is. Then he finish cuts it. And so this guy rough cuts it. He calls you up and says, guess what? Dead center of this thing is a flaw. And if I try to cut it like I told you, it is going to split and you're not going to have a diamond at all. You say, what can we do? Well, I can split it now and I can give you a diamond that's about that big. It won't be the most valuable diamond. It won't be the largest diamond, but it'll be valuable. Well, I want the biggest. You can't hold out for the biggest. And you can't hold out for the first contract. You say, well, you reckon the disciples understood it? I don't know. If the apostles ever got it down, I know this. Read the Gospels. You know what you won't find? You won't find a feeding of the 3,000. Either they got it or God gave up. But you'll never find a feeding of the 3,000. Near as I can tell, that would take about 18 bread trucks, two fishing trawlers, and you'd have a McDonald's fish sandwich left over. People, what I'm saying is this. If God came by and has tried to be a blessing or is going to come by and try to make you a blessing, you better grab on while you can. And if you drop the ball, you better not wait for the first offer when the second one comes by. So why was I at Grass Lake? Why on earth? Why did I go to Grass Lake? Why did God not let me have a vacation? Why did all those things happen? You know how long I pondered that question? Over 20 years. That's right. For over 20 years. I was not upset with God. We were not mad at God. I knew that God did not let us go there. He did not let us stay that week. We got a vacation later. But for 20 years, I said, God, why did you let me go all the way to Grass Lake just so you turn me around and come back home? 20-some years after that miserable night in that little cottage on the lake, a man came up to me in a service. He's an evangelist. Travels around the world and preaches. He said, you ever remember preaching in such a church in Michigan? Yeah, I remember that. On my way to Grass Lake. He said, you preached that morning when the invitation was given. I came forward and surrendered to the field of evangelism. And for 20-some years, he's been gone all around this world preaching. You see, people, all I could see was my vacation, and all God could see was a blessing. And I didn't even know what he had done for over 2 decades. You know what you need to do? You need to not etch your plans in granite. Because God could change them just like that. And the worst part about it is, he'll change them to benefit somebody other than you. And doesn't that make you mad? Come on, if you're honest, doesn't that bother you? See, you said if you were part of a miracle, you'd be glad. The apostles were part of a miracle. They weren't glad, they were mad. And if those guys, that close, I mean right there, shoulder to shoulder with Jesus Christ, if they can be mad at him, I guarantee you can. If they can miss a miracle right in front of them that they had their hands on, you can miss one. All I'm telling you is, man, you better be loose. And you better be limber. And you better be flexible. And you better be eager to do whatever God tells you to do or directs you. And don't worry if it doesn't go along with your plan. Maybe you'll get that first blessing. And if you've missed it, don't you hold out for the first one. Grab on to the second. I'd like you to stand with your heads bowed. Your head's bowed and your eyes closed. How many people are here tonight that would say this? Preacher, I know beyond a shadow of a doubt that I'm saved. You know what? I'd love for God to use me in some kind of a blessing for somebody. Here's my hand. Would you? All right, God bless you. Here's what I'm going to tell you to do. Beware. Be very wary. Don't hold your plans too high. Don't be too quick to get mad at God if he changes your plans. And don't try to figure out what he did or what he's doing. Just go with the flow, man. How many here would be honest enough to say this? Preacher, as I look in my life, I can see where God brought that first blessing by, and I dropped the ball. Will you pray for me that when the second blessing comes along, I'll grab it real quick? Here's my hand. Would you pray for me? Somebody like that? God bless you. All right. A few hands. Thank you. I don't know if there's anybody here tonight that could say, Preacher, I missed the first blessing when the second one came. I missed that too. I told you I never found the feeding of the 3,000 in this book. But I do have on this pulpit, I have a book that tells about a city named Nineveh that was not offered repentance but got it when they repented. It tells about a mean, wicked king by the name of Manasseh who was as vile as they could get, but when he repented, God granted him repentance. And if you're here tonight and you think you missed the first blessing and the second one, you know what I'd do? Literally, I would throw myself at the mercy of God. I would throw myself at His feet, say, God, have mercy on me. God, I will feed 50 people if that's what you want. It doesn't have to be 3,000. It doesn't have to be 3,099. God, if you want me to feed a half a dozen, I'll do it. I just want to be part of a blessing. In just a moment, I'll have a word of prayer. The invitation will be open, and maybe some of you need to come and talk to God. Father, thank you for your goodness. Thank you for your grace, and I thank you, God, for your great kindness. Thank you for this book and what it tells us. I ask now, Lord, please, you see these people. They want to be part of a blessing. I pray, God, that you'll use them. Father, some raise their hands. They feel as though maybe the first blessing went by and they missed it. I pray, God, that they will be attentive to the second time around. I hope they get in on the feeding of the 4,000. God, maybe there's somebody tonight that has missed the feeding of the 5,000, just didn't understand it, and missed the feeding of the 4,000. God, have mercy, please. Have mercy. And use them in some way. In Jesus' name I pray. If your head's bowed and your eyes closed, piano. If you need to come, you come right now. Don't wait for the piano. If you need to come, you come. Want to be part of a blessing? Maybe you need to pray, God, help me not to be the focal point of everything that I do. Help me not always to think of myself. Help me not always to think that every great thing that happens has to happen in my behalf. The law of the second blessing. I want you to know tonight is a very gracious God who will use you and who will then, if you drop the ball, offer to use you again. Avail yourself of His grace and of His mercy.